topic that we have for today is really a fascinating topic. The question of the responsibility of a Beis Din to adjudicate Dinei Nefashos in the context of a Beis Din of 23. And there's a lot to say about this. We'll try to give a little bit of an overview. And I'd like to say, if I can say so myself, this is a moment of super synergy. This is going to flow very well within the context of our Sunday topic, which we started last week, which will continue to go well in this week. All of it complements each other. So hopefully, and it also works with the Parsha, works with last week's Parsha. It'll work a little bit with this week's Parsha. I'll explain that on Sunday. So there is a real synergistic flow. I think everything in this context is coming just at the right moment, in the right place. So hopefully we should be able to use all of these shiurim to understand each other better. So with all that, let's look a little bit at the unique issue of the Beis Din of Chof Gimel. So first of all, if you saw from the beginning of Amar Makomos, so there is a machlokes as to what exactly we mean when we say Chof Gimel in terms of when that requirement is. Right? What's that machlokes about? What am I referring to? Right, there is a... Are
you? Is it just for murder or...
Well, no, but there is a unique component of murder specifically, which is relevant to some of the Makoros. But what I'm interested first is in terms of what stage of the process, right? So if you saw, there was a Machlokes Meforshim and Chumash really, right? In a different context, and the pasuk says Al Pishnayim Eidim Oshlosha Yumas Hames. So what do we understand from Al Pishnayim Oshlosha? What's the reason the Torah is saying two or three? So Rashi tells us it means that three is the same as two, etc., etc., that once you have two Eidim, you could have more. Maybe it means that it's preferable to have three, because if you have the possibility of having three Eidim, so then when it comes to a situation like this, you want to investigate as thoroughly as possible. Therefore, even if you could be satisfied with two Eidim, if you have the possibility of getting three, you should go for three. Maybe that's the message. But what does the Ramban quote from Rav Sajigon? Yes?
That three are required to accept the Eidim.
Oh, so you have two and three, right? You have two giving the Eidim, and three listening. And that's surprising, because since the context of the pasuk is Dinei Nefashos, which requires 23... So it sounds like we're saying that, yes, well, eventually you'll need 23. But for the Kabbalah Sa'edus, then that apparently you could do with just three. And the Ramban says, it's not true. It's not true. You need 23 throughout. And we find perhaps this also coming up in a difference between Rashi and the Ran, for those of you who found the Ran, right? That the Gemara and Daf Yudzayin in Maseches Sanhedrin has a line over here, Marav Kolir She'ein Bo Shnayim L'daber V'Echa L'Shmoa Ei Moshiv Ba Sanhedri. That you need to have three people in the presence of the Sanhedrin. We have to have three people in order to have a Sanhedrin. So you need to have two or three who can listen, meaning two who understand the language, and one who is able to get it from the other two who understand the language. So ultimately you have three. So it sounds like there, for the Kabbalah Seidus, all you need is three. And what does the Ran say? What does the Ran say over there, for those of you who found it? That he disagrees with this Rashi, and understands that when we're talking about Dinei Nefashos, for Kabbalah Seidus, you need more. You need 23. So that itself is an interesting machlokas to keep in mind, and we'll come back to. But just before we start, just maybe you could give me some thoughts. Why would you say one or the other? Why would you say you need 23 for the Kabbalah Sages? Why would you say you don't need 23 for the Kabbalah Sages? Or phrase a little differently, if you need 23 ever, why would it be not for the Kabbalah Sages? Are you?
Because why would you need a huge panel to just accept someone's testimony? It doesn't require much adjudication.
So you're saying it's just a question about testimony. How much, why can't you just have one?
Because you need a basis.
Why do you need a pattern?
Because
So what does that mean? So you need a bezdin, but it's a minimal role, so it's so easy to be mekabel testimony. So therefore, they go down a level. Interesting.
Marty? I have a general question. What's the difference between kabbalah seidus and like judging the actual case? That's
a good question too. You know, it seems that the final psak, you know, we'll call that a certain degree of mishpat, but it's hard to separate Kabbalah Sa'idus from the process, right? Because you also have to ask the Eidim question, and you have to, which is why, for example, it's saying the secular court, so they very rarely will accept testimony that's videotaped, right? Because it's not just about getting information. Sometimes they will under extreme circumstances, but for the most part, you want the aid there, right? Because it's part of the problem. It's also a right that the accused has the right to confront his accusers. But also, as part of the process, the judges have to be able to ask questions, have to be able to get as clear a picture as possible. So it would seem like this is part of the discussion. This is a part of the process.
But if you could differentiate, what would you...
Right, so then you'd have to say that really that we only need 23 for the actual passing of the name. The actual saying, we have decided to try Misa. Right, because they'd have... Sorry?
But it's already...
A good part of the process could have happened not in the presence of this 23 panel. That's what it sounds like. Right, so it seems like that's where they're arguing. Right? Is this 23-person panel necessary for the whole analysis? Or only at the last stage when they say, Chayiv Misa, you need to have 23, but not necessarily for all the investigative parts. So, someone say both? So, it would seem like they're arguing a little bit as to whether the 23 are more of a formality. It's supposed to represent a certain level of authority when passing on this din. Or does it have to do with the chumrah of the issue, we're dealing with someone's life? So, therefore, that requires a broader panel. And presumably, it should require that broader panel for the whole process, for the Kabbalah Sa'idus, and for everything else. So keep that question in mind, and let's look at some more things that we find in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah explains where the number of 23 comes from, later on. Right, towards the end of the Mishnah, towards the end of the very long Mishnah. So the Mishnah tells us, how do we get the number of 23? And this, I'd like to spend a little bit of time discussing the whole nature of this limud. Minayim l'ketana shehisho esrim v'shlosha, ketana related in relevance to the Sanhedrin Gedola, but not, it's more than the panel 3, obviously. Minayim l'ketana shehisho esrim v'shlosha, shenamar v'shoftu ha'eda v'hitzilu ha'eda. Right, so there's two different components to the process. And we need eda shofetes v'eda matzeles. So you need an Eidah is 10, which we'll find out in a second how an Eidah is 10. It's the same source that a minion is 10, at least according to some of the Rishonim. So an Eidah equals 10, and we need 10 for each side, one Shofetas and one Matzelas, so that equals 20. So then the Mishnah explains how we know about the 10, 9 Eidah Shiasar, Shnemar, Admasa Eidah Harazos, Yotzi Yoshua Bakalev. So you take out those two, got the two good Meragim, the bad Eidah is 10. Find Shemei Ani, Shei Yama Tova. Sim K, Lama Nemar Achrab Mahatos. So, what's the significance of Achrab Mahatos? So, here we say, Lok Hatayoskal Tova, Hatayoskal Ra, Hatayoskal Tova Al Piedecha. If you want to say he's innocent, you only need one. That's enough of a majority. Hatayoskal Ra Al Pi Shnaim. So, apparently, in order to judge someone, Chayiv Misa, you need to have both an Eidah for each side. Obviously, it's not going to necessarily work out this way in terms of the actual numbers, but at least in the potential, we have to be able to have 10 on one side, 10 on the other side, and a majority of 2. So now you're going to need to have 22 potentially, but that would be an even number. So in order to avoid that, we end up with 23. So there's a lot that's derived elsewhere in Shas, in the Bavli, and the Yerushalmi, from this idea of Shoftu Eida Vitzilu Eida. So there's a lot to try to figure out. Presumably, the thrust of this pasuk is consistent throughout, that all the different drushes that we see And I didn't know how far you get with Mamar Koma, so I didn't point you in all the other places, but I can happily provide you if you want to look at them tomorrow or Monday or Sunday. But there are a number of other drushes that are connected to this pasuk, which one could assume are probably related, are probably all making a joint message. So, first of all, what is the context of this pasuk? What's going on in this pasuk? So, Goldam is part of it. Right.
After he reaches the Urim and Thummim, they need to then actually make sure that he killed accidentally, so they take him out of the Urim and Thummim to judge him. And after, if he's pronounced innocent of, I guess, killing the guy on purpose, they have to take him back to the Urim and Thummim so that Goldam doesn't kill him.
Yeah, basically, so apparently all killers of any status of guilt first end up in the Ari Mikvah. That's the first step. Now, that's how the investigation happens. And then you get taken out of the Ari Mikvah when the Beis Din is ready to look into your case. And there are three things that can happen. Either you could be judged completely innocent, in which case they send you home. Or you could be judged intentionally guilty, in which case, Chayav Misa. Or you could be judged a Ritzayach B'Shogeg, in which case you go back to the Ur Mikvah. So in the context of the Ur Mikvah, the Torah tells us all of these rules in Sefer Midbar, and so these are the choices, either B'Shaftu or B'Tzilu, either you'll find him guilty or you'll find him innocent. So because you have an Eidah for each, so we need Eidah Matzeles v'Eidah Shofetes. So among the dinim that are learned from here, is that you need to have only dayanim who are not related to anybody here. In other words, among the dayanim, you can't have dayanim who are related either to the accused, to the defendant, or to the victim. And the Torah Tamimah, commenting on this pasuk, and I'll quote over the next few minutes, God willing, a bunch of comments from the Torah Tamimah. They're not all in the same place. Some of them are over here in Bamidbar. Some that we'll mention are in Parshas Mishpatim. I'm putting together, and what we'll hear over the next few minutes, a couple of different comments in the Torah Tamimah. But he comments on this drasha that apparently what we see from Eida Matzelas and Eida Shofetes is that we need to have the potential for a real thrashing out of the issue. Which means we need to have people who are going to be very open to discussing why he's guilty. And we need to have people who are going to be very open to discussing why he's innocent. And presumably, if anybody is biased in one way or the other, that's not what we want. Right? So we don't want somebody who's related to the defendant and who's going to feel a deficiency as far as Eidah Shofetes. And we don't want somebody who's related to the victim and who's going to feel biased in the other direction and is not going to be able to be fully on board with Eidah Matzelas. So what you see from here, again, focusing on each one of these drushes is probably contributing to a whole theme here. So the idea of v'shaftu v'tzilu is that we need to have a real airing out of everything, and therefore if anybody is related and therefore biased, so they're going to compromise this goal of Eidah Shofetes and Eidah Matzelas. In that same comment, he also notes, we'll just mention, he talks a little bit about linguistically why it is that the Sanhedrin is referred to in this pasuk with the language of Eidah. So our Mishnah uses it to derive the number 10 in the whole Gezeirah Shavah. But it is interesting also just to think about the question of, we use Eidah, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, as the marker for a minion. So it's 10 when we daven. We daven b'tzibur. And there's two minyanim in the Beis Din, and we need a minyan protecting him and a minyan arguing against him. So it seems that probably the Tzad HaShaveh is that the minyan, the idea is you want to daven b'tzibur, so you have a microcosm of b'tzibur, and our drushos tell us that 10 constitutes a microcosm of the community. And so too, the Sanhedrin, when it's judging somebody in a capital sense, presumably also is a stand-in for the community. And we've mentioned in the past some references to the literature about the death penalty debate in society, in America, in secular society. So among what you find discussed is the fact that the executioner, for example, is a representative of society, of the people as a whole. And we know also the jury system that came over from the English system. The idea is that you are judged specifically so much by society that it's actual society, people plucked out to represent your peers. You know, almost more society than it is any kind of professional. That's the idea of the jury system. So maybe there's some element to that also, that the Sanhedrin in this component, in this capacity, as somebody weighing life and death of an individual, is a microcosm of society, and therefore it's referred to as an Eidah in the Torah, and Eidah is therefore equal to 10, and we need 2 so that we have both sides of the story.
Is that related to why Avram specifically saw 10 people in the...
Very possibly. There's a lot of literature, and that's getting very partial. What's the word? Or time we in a partial sense. So that's coming up soon. So that there is maybe obviously started with higher numbers, but you know the idea that maybe you couldn't go below that. There is a lot to be said about that. So in any event, so the whole question of what exactly is the significance of it, Tzilu Eidah. So again, we find a few other drashos that are connected to it, and a few other dinim. So one of the dinim that's considered, it's not explicitly the case that this is connected to it, but it's considered by the Torah Tamima, is the very striking din that we conveniently talked about on Sunday, this past Sunday, that the Sanhedrin, Sharo Kulo Lechova, that if you have a Sanhedrin that judged somebody and they found him to be unanimously guilty, so then he gets sent away. He's punished. So what exactly is the basis for that? Right, so we discussed a little bit on Sunday why you should have such a striking din. So many found this din to be very surprising. So the Torah Tamima discusses this din in two places, in Parshas Mishpatim and in Sefer Bamidbar. And he considers the fact that maybe this is also a function of V'Hitzilu Eidah, right? This is the Gemara. If you want to see the Gemara, it appears on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. On the bottom of his name, off in our Masechta, Rav Kahana, Sanhedri, Shero, Kulam, Lechova, Pochinosa. So that very striking din. So maybe that's a function. The Gemara doesn't explicitly connect it, but maybe you could say that that's also a function of its Siluedim. Sorry? Okay. So is that true? So the Torah Tzimimah considers that. You can hear logically where that's coming from, but maybe if we see that there is an imperative to have a body of people at least potentially arguing for his innocence, and maybe that's not happening here, so maybe that's what the din is. Personally speaking, he happens not to like that explanation, because he finds the whole din to be very, very difficult. And he actually favors, you have to see his comment in Parshas Mishpatim, where he makes this clear, and Bamidbar doesn't make this clear, but in Parshas Mishpatim he makes it clear that he thinks that the unusual minority interpretation of the Ramah is correct. With Meir Halevi, understands this Gemara differently than everyone else does. And he understands the Gemara to mean that potrinoso, what does that mean? Not in the sense of you're excused, but I guess in the sense of nifter, in the sense of he is executed even more quickly. That if it's so open and shut, so then that's it. Now again, this is the minority interpretation. It's much more commonly assumed that it means that he's off the hook. And by the way, we also mentioned the possibility on Sunday that it comes from the idea that if it can't be so clear-cut, and if it's so clear-cut, then there must be something missing in the process. He discusses that possibility also, the Torah Tamima. But he thinks that the interpretation of the Ramah, as unusual as it is, maybe it actually is a little bit more workable with some of the sources, that's what it means. But if it means the traditional interpretation that the person is innocent, so maybe you could argue that that's an expression of this ethos of Tzilu Eidah, that there has to be an active force arguing on his behalf, and if not, there is something fundamentally flawed about the process.
Is there a reason why the Gemara would use the word pochinosa, if it meant in language of nifter?
Right, I mean, I just really punning to say nifter in that sense, that they make him nifter. I don't think that's the way the Ramah understands it, but he understands it to mean like a quicker speeding him to the death process. That if it's so clear, okay, then just rush him right to the end. You know, just forget this; it's over, and rush to the end. So there is a reason why we use an unusual language, and that's what it's trying to convey. There's a different din. There got to be some din here. Right, so you don't. There's got to be some chiddush. So we would know. Normally, we know that if there's a majority, so then he's chayv nisa. So if it's a unanimous majority, of course you chayiv nisa. So according to the Ramah, what's the chiddush of the Gemara? The chiddush is that you kill him even faster. That, you know, then you understand, okay, that you go right to the process. But clearly it's a bigger chiddush the other way, and that's why it's more conventionally understood that it means that he is exempt. Hi.
When you say like we go even more quickly, that means like we skip the whole procession real like. And like, I think the Gemara talks about like leaving like a horse like by the
right.
Game, so we skip all those stuff.
That's maybe, yeah, it's hard to know. Again, practically, we don't see this happening, so it's hard to know. You can open up the Shulchan Aruch and find out exactly what it would mean. But I guess it means, it has to mean something. If, again, it can't just mean that he's Chayav Misa, because then there's no point, according to the Ramah, there's no point in the Gemara. So it's got to mean something like that. You'd have to ask him exactly what would be left out of the process. But in some sense, it's conveying that you rush him to the end. There isn't anything more to talk about. Maybe he means to skip all those dinim that we don't pause to allow other things to come up and things like that. So that's a possible function of Itzilu Eda, which the Torah Tumimah discusses and doesn't perfectly like. Now the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Chavav tells us that Itzilu Eda is the source for another din that we also mentioned on Sunday. That we have a rule of Ein Eid Naisa Dayan, that if you have a member of the Sanhedrin who happens to have witnessed the murder, so then that Dayan cannot be a part of the Sanhedrin judging him. Why not? Because how is he going to fulfill the function of the Tzilu Eda if he saw it happen? Right, which is interesting in a bunch of ways, right? Because again, it shows that this is built in, that the Tzilu Eda means you have to have the ability to be able to see the positive side. And it also means that both this and the halacha from the Yerushalmi that we mentioned a few minutes ago about relatives, it shows you that the Tzilu Eda is working on two planes. Right, and on the one hand, we have to have room to have an Eda Matzelas and an Eda Shofetas plus enough to be Makriyas. So then it sounds like you need 10 on one team, 10 on the other team. But this din of not having relatives and this din of not having witnesses who saw it, so that also shows you that each Dayan by himself has to contain both. Right? Each Dayan himself has to have the Koach Lahatzil and the Koach Lishbot, has to be able to see the up and down, and if any Dayan has a Negiah one way or the other, or was actually a witness, so then he becomes disqualified. So it seems to suggest that the Tzilu Eda is functioning on a couple of different levels. A whole group, and also each individual has an inherent din of the Tzilu Eda.
You say that the Sanhedrin's goal is to like figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand how that, meaning this person knows what happened even better.
Yeah, I know, that's why it's so striking. And so, but apparently it's so crucial a part of the process, he can be an aide. He can come and tell you, he can get another Dayan, he can come testify what happened, and they can listen to him, but he's not going to be one of the Dayanim. That part of his function is that Dayan, he has to be completely open to all the possibilities. And if he's going to be compromised because never he saw the actual thing happen, so again, it's certainly striking to think that, okay, if that's all there is to it, then let's just let it be over then. But it also seems like, you could say it a couple of ways, but it seems like even when we could have seen it happen, there still might be other angles to it, and this person is going to be biased. He saw it, so he's going to assume the other angles don't exist, and therefore it can't function as a dime.
Yeah, so then
you would have to have another panel.
Doesn't the context in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that they see the moon?
Right.
And like, that's not something that you can see from a different angle or something.
Right. Well, the Gemara has two different dinim, you know, in terms of the Tazdin for a Kisha Chodesh and also for Ritzicha. So they're coming, so the din here by Ritzicha is coming from the Tzilu Eda. So it seems like, again, the Tzilu Eda is a particular halacha here, which affects things on a couple levels. It affects the whole count of the Beis Din, and affects also every individual's role. Now, the Torah Tzmima commenting on that, Rosh, again, I'm combining a bunch of different comments of his. So commenting on that, Rosh, the Torah Tzmima says that, well, you know, you might think that combine this with what we spoke about a minute ago, that actually it should help. That if we're worried he should have the ability to get off, so listen, if they all find him guilty, then he'll get off. So all the more so that if this guy saw it, they'll find him guilty, and then maybe they'll all find him guilty, and then he'll become he'll become exonerated for that reason. So we shouldn't worry that he doesn't have the potential to be saved. He'll have even better potential to be saved. He'll have another guilty vote. Which is a little bit of a funny way of looking at it. But he notes that in that context, he says, well, if you put this together with the Ramah's interpretation, right, then it works better. Right? If we say that if it's a unanimous vote against him, he's going to get killed even more quickly. So then for sure we wouldn't want to put very quick negative votes on the panel, and that would certainly go against the theme of Yitzilu Eda and with the Ramah's interpretation. You could see why the two didn't work well together. But if you assume the mainstream interpretation, that it means he'll get off if there's a unanimous vote against him, so then all the more so, let's let this prejudged negative guy be on the panel. So he suggests there, which is an important point, that maybe we want to have Eda Matzeles not only when the vote is taken, but we also need to have an Eda Matzeles in the argumentation. So if this guy is not going to be open to any other positions during the argument, so it means that you're not going to have an Eda Matzeles then. And that's a fundamental flaw. So this goes back to our original question about what do you need 23 for? Do you need 23 for the Kabbalah Sa'idus, like the Ramban, and like the Ran? Or do you only need 23 for the actual Psak, but you can have a Kabbalah Sa'idus with 3, like maybe Rashi, and like Rapsajigam? And possibly like the Rambam also, by the way, so that was also on the Mar Chomas, that's how the Or Sameach understands the Rambam too. So it could be that really this is the issue, that what is the function of Eda Matzeles? Does Eda Matzeles mean that you have to have an Eda potentially voting for him? Or the whole Birur has to be with somebody who's able to argue on behalf of this guy? And if during that Birur process you don't have an Eda Matzeles, even let's say by the Kabbalah Sa'idus, so then there's a fundamental flaw. Now this is interesting. Hi, David. Yeah, the question is, why do we need 23, right? So we see from the end of the Mishnah, we need 23 because there has to be an Eda Matzeles. So the question is, when does the Eda Matzeles have to be there? Is it just that the Eda Matzeles has to be there when the vote is taken? Or no, that the whole process of clarification of the issue, you have to have an Eda that's really part of that process and asking all the hard questions against the evidence. And if you don't have them then there's something that's missing. So that seems to be the Ramban's position and the Ran's position. That even when the Eidim are saying their things, you need to have a 23-person panel part of that process. And this is relevant also to a question the Menchas Chinuch asks. The Menchas Chinuch in Taf Samach Dalet asks the following question. It says, so this point that we started with, the Ramban and Rapsajigam, right, that according to Rapsajigam, you can have a difference. Whatever the Mishnah says, 23, 3, 71, whatever it is, that's only talking about the end stage. But the Kabbalah Sa'edus, that could be different. So you could say 21 for Dina Nefashos, or 23 for Dina Nefashos, but just 3 for Kabbalah Sa'edus. And the Ramban seems to disagree. The Ramban says, no, everything is across the board. Whatever the number is, that's what you need for the whole process. So says the Menchas Chinuch, it can bring you a raya that the Ramban is wrong. And Rav Sajigom is right, that the number is not always the same. How do I know? I know that from our Mishnah also, together with a few other Makoros. Because this topic gives us an opportunity to, you know, we're trying to discuss all these smaller topics in the Mishnah, so some of them we won't get to. So this topic allows us to bring in a few references, you'll see, to a few of the other smaller dinim in the Mishnah. So what kind of a Beis Din do you need for an Ir HaNidachas? And what does our Mishnah say about that?
71.
You need 71, right? Now says the Menchas Chinuch, the problem is, you don't have 71 for Kabbalah Sa'idus, the Ir HaNidachas. Because it's clear from the Gemara and the Rambam, he writes, that the Sanhedrin in that town could collect the Eidus. And it's just that the final psak is going to be issued by the Bezna Vod and Lishkas HaGazis. So it seems like there's a raya that it's not equal, that the final number, whatever number the Mishnah is telling us, is not the number you have to have the whole time. Do you understand this question? So you hear before, I take it, when you hear the Chasimah's question, it says the Ramban's position is that the numbers in this Mishnah is 3, 23, 71, they have to be throughout the whole process. So you see, from Yerei Dachas, it's not true. Because Yerei Dachas, the Mishnah says 71. And that can't be true for the Kabbalah Seidas. That maybe was happening in front of a panel of 23 in that city. But that's not what the Mishnah says. So apparently the Mishnah is talking about the final stage, is not talking about the Kabbalah Seidas, says the Mechas Chinuch, and he thinks that's a proof against the Ramban. Question?
Is it that's just because of like an inherent difference between the Sanhedrin HaGadol and the Sanhedrin Tano, which
okay.
Sanhedrin HaGadol is like much more of a formal body, mm-hmm. in like declaring, in like dealing with like national matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like even, it wouldn't necessarily like work on the same scale down, like, oh, since the 23 could collect ethos for something that the 71 declares, so then also the 3 could collect ethos for something that the 23 declares.
So you're saying that whatever the number is, 71 is always going to be different.
Yeah.
That you can't draw any parallels. So I think there's some truth to that. That may not be the whole answer, but I think there's definitely some truth to that. Shmuel Rozovsky, in the Sefer Zechon Shmuel, Shmuel Rozovsky, I think we've mentioned him, he was a famous Maggid Shir in the Panavish Yeshiva, and his Shirim have been printed in many different versions, Shiuri Rib Shmuel, Fidusha Rib Shmuel, many different madurs, many different colors, find them all over the place, on many masechtas. There's one sefer called Zechron Shmuel, which has a lot of the essays that he wrote in journals and things like that about more general topics. So in the Zechron Shmuel, he writes, or he's quoted, as saying that, similar to Morty, but a little bit differently, that there is a din that the psak of a Irani Dachas has to be the 71. And yes, that's a function of its national reality. You're passing on a city of a nation, okay, you need the national bezdin to do that. But the halacha of 23, that's a halacha that comes from Dina Nefashos. Right? The Dina Nefashos needs to have 23 people involved, Eda Matzelas and Eda Shofetas. So because Yerhani Dachas ultimately involves people's lives, so then you need to have 23. So the Kabbalah Sa'idas and all of the investigation is going to need 23 because it's a Dina Nefashos issue. And because of the Yerhani Dachas, the psak has to be 71. But there is a halacha across the board that Dina Nefashos are 23. So the Kabbalah Sa'idas is by 23 when it's a normal Dina Nefashos case. And for Yerhani Dachas also, the Kabbalah Sa'idas is also 23. Okay, so far so good? Okay, everything making sense so far? Okay, so let's go for a few more minutes. So what emerges is that we see there is a specific din of Yitzilu Eida. Right? What does Yitzilu Eida do for us? It requires a certain number of Dayanim so that we can have the potential of finding the schus in both ways. And in that sense, it's really parallel to B'shaftu. And it also requires that every judge independently have that potential too. But it seems also, in this case, a little less parallel to the Shoftu, that there is an inherent bias towards Hatzal, towards saving the defendant. And that we find apparently expressing itself in a few places also. And this is an idea that may differentiate Dina Nefashos from other things. So, for example, Rav Shechter in his Shiurim on Torah Shlapeh, God willing, the editor should get moving and it should get published someday soon.
Amen.
So, May, tonight, somebody should get that message to him. That one of the things he talks about is that among the Midos Shatar and Drashus Behem, that among the different ways in which we interpret halacha, so we find that one of the ways we analyze things is we recognize that different areas of halacha sometimes have different rules. And among those rules, notes that Dina Nefashos has its own set of attitudes because of its Yitzilu Eida. that there is a bias towards saving people because of this principle. Now, he discusses this also, this concept in a sefer that has been published already, in the Eretz HaTzvi, his first sefer. And there he discusses the following point. And if you saw this on the Maamar Makomos, that the Gemara in a few places refers to in the context of Mises Bezdin, the bias that we have if we're not sure to not execute the person, which the Gemara uses the phrase Safik Nefashos L'Hakel. Right? That if we're not sure, so we don't execute the person. So Rashi in the Sefes Ksubis, on Daf Tesvav, if you got a chance to see it, right? Rashi says, how do we know Sofik Nefashos L'Hakel? How do we know that a Bezdin is not going to execute someone unless they're sure? What does Rashi say? Right, that's what he understands. This pasuk is telling us that there is a bias, perhaps, towards making sure that we explore all the possibilities for Hatzal. Now, Tosus, Maseches Bava Basra, on Daf Nun, what does Tosus say? So that, right, Tosus says, what do I need this for? He quotes Rashi. Doesn't identify there where the Rashi is, Rashi and Subis. So he quotes Rashi, Perish Bakuntris, that's because of Vitzilu Aida. And Tosta says, well, what do we need that for? We know that we're clearly not going to kill somebody in Yisafik. In essence, it's a Kalvachoma. That we know we're not going to take money from somebody in Yisafik. We have a principle that Amotze Mechavero Olav Araya. And if we have a Safek, we let the Mukhzak hold on to his money. So you think we're going to kill somebody with Safek? Now, parenthetically, the Kal v'Chomer is not a perfect one. We'll discuss, it's going to come up in Daf Gimel, the whole question of Ein Holchem Mamon Achar Haro. And it seems that in some ways we actually are more machmer on the Mamon Shaila than the Nefasho Shaila, which is an interesting thing to explore. But on the surface, this is what Tosfos says, that if we don't take money from somebody if we're not sure, we're certainly not going to kill them if we're not sure. So why would I need the Tzilu Eida to tell me Sofik Nefashos L'Hakim? So there is an approach that a number of Achronim take. Rabbi Chanan and his Kovit Shirim commenting in Bava Basra, who gets those Reish Chachimel. And Rav Yosef Engel in the Sefer Beis Otzer. I think we spoke about that last week, the Sefer Beis Otzer, right? Beis Otzer was Rav Yosef Engel's Encyclopedia of Lamdas, which we only have, unfortunately, the first two volumes of. But in Chelik Aleph, so he discusses Ein Onshum and Hadin, topic we talked about a little bit last week, and very relevant to that discussion. So he talks about when you apply that klal, when you don't apply that klal. So in that discussion, he talks about this Rashi and Tosfos. Why is it that, as Tosfos asks, what's the chiddush of Yitzilu Ha'eda for the purposes of Safik Nefashos L'Hakel? You would have said that anyway. So both he and Rav Chanan seem to say that the difference is that if you only had the rule of Safik Nefashos L'Hakel, so it would be exactly that. It would be that this individual that's off the hook, misafik. We don't know that he's exempt from Mises Bezdin, we just are not sure, so we won't proceed. But the chiddush of Yitzilu Ha'eda is more than that. And that comes to tell us that there's a ptur vada, that anyone who the evidence doesn't fully give us basis to execute, is Pater Vadai Mises Bezdin. So what's an Afkamina? Who cares whether you call it Pater Vada? So there are a few Afkaminas that are discussed there. So for example, Yosef Engel says, let's say the Sanhedrin would violate this and would kill him anyway. So would you say they're Rotsen? Are they murderers? So if it's just a Din and Safek, then presumably they're not Rotsen. It wasn't proper procedure. But Mice, it's a Mises Bezdin. But if he's actually Potter, that's what Yitzilu Ha'eda tells us, that he's no more Chayav Misa than everyone else on the street. So then the Sanhedrin are not murderers. There's another nafkamina, which is very not so practical for us, but I said we want to take the opportunity to include other lines in the Mishnah. So there is a din in the Mishnah that kmisas habaylin kachmisas hashor, right? That if you have a shor haniskol, so a shor haniskol based on dinim and drashos, a shor haniskol is treated like a human being would be treated with a bezdin of 23, etc. But it's clear that there's no din of pikuach nefesh for a shor. And there's no general suffik nefashos lahakel kind of principle for a shor. So both the Bochanan and Rav Yosef Engel write that the idea is if it's something nefashos lahakil that's pushing it in based on we're not going to kill somebody misafek and pikuach nefesh and the like, so presumably that doesn't apply to a shor. But if it's part of the process of mitzvah bezdin that v'tzilu ha'eda is built in, so then, maybe that's true by a shor also. Maybe the shor gets mitzvah bezdin in the same way that a person does. And if a prat in mitzvah bezdin is that it's only applicable in a vaday situation, maybe that's what the Mishnah is then going to say, that mitzvah ha'bayim kach mitzvah ha'shor. Well, that's the other way, right? Why we wouldn't say it if it's a bigger than the fashos, but if tzilu ha'eda is a prat in mitzvah bezdin works, so then maybe we could carry that point through. So if we consider this point in light of what we said last week, right, the way we looked at the whole onus of Malchus and the symbolism of onus of Malchus, so you could say here also that mitzvah is bezdin, right, especially if we follow the same mahalach we were following, let's say within the Rambam and Kapar and all of that, you could say that mitzvah is bezdin by its very nature is only applicable when we know that we have all of the elements in play. When we know that there is a vadai guilt and a vadai deservedness for the fee of Misa, so it's only in that context that the Onesh Misa the Torah talks about makes sense. And anything short of that is not the fee of Misa. It's not the Onesh Misa that the Torah talks about. So perhaps that's what the Tzilu Ha'eda is telling us, more than just Sofek Nefashos L'Hakel. It's not just telling us that, okay, we have a mitzvah here, but we can't do it because we might end up killing someone. It's saying more than that. It's saying that by its very definition, the Onesh Misa is predicated on the assumption that the person is Vadai, meaning of the standards. So again, this whole parallel we spoke about last week, we said last week that the drushes teach us inherently that Malchus is an Onesh which has to, on the one hand, be similar enough to death, but on the other hand, not gvadai death. So too, the onesh misa has to only make sense when there is a vadai chiyuv. So perhaps that's part of what Hitzilu Ha'eda tells us. So with that in mind, we'll add one more point, and then we'll have to, there's more to say about this point, so that guy will, and we'll continue on Monday. But just to introduce it, so here the din on the last part of the Amud, where it says that we need a majority of two. So what exactly does that mean? So why don't we say a majority of one? We say normally after Rav Mahatos. So let's just leave it as a majority of one. What's the idea of a majority of two? So there is a discussion about this in the Sefer Degel Ruvein. Degel Ruvein, are you familiar with that Sefer? Okay, you should be. Chashuv Sefer with a connection to our yeshiva. The Degel Ruvein was a Ruvein Katz, was a Rav of Petach Tikva. But his son, Michal Katz, was a Rabbi in this yeshiva. He passed away a few years ago, maybe before you all got here, but just, you know, not so long ago. In my time, there was a Michal Katz here. So Michal Katz's father was a Ruvein Katz. So the Degel Ruvein, he writes that since we have this chiyuv of tilting towards taking care of all sfeikos in the context of dina nefashos, so the rove that we need for mitzvahs bezdin is not a simple rove. It's got to be a rove that's actually mevarer, a rove that really tells us that we're right. Now it's hard, you have to figure out exactly what it means by that, because it can't be a mevarer in the classic sense that we actually know we're right, because here you still may have 10 or 11 people who think you're wrong. So it's hard to say. It's an absolute mavar. But we need one that accounts basically for the margin of error.
There is no such thing as absolute mavar also, right?
Maybe not everyone's high. Right, but that might not be... When you see, if you had an absolute mavar, you'd probably have everyone voting high,
yeah.
And then you'd be stuck. Parenthetically, you know, we didn't get into this because our subject isn't Sanhedrin Shul Kulachova, it was just a proof. But there is a discussion. What happens if you you notice that this really guilty guy is going to get off because it's going to be unanimous and he's so guilty, but he's really guilty and it's going to be unanimous and you're a dying, so are you allowed to vote innocent so that he shall? So the whole is an arachayim about this, we're going to have about this, the whole discussion. But what about this concern that you should have two Dayana majorities? So he writes that a one-person majority could be a fluke. You could always have one crazy person. So to have just one difference between the two, so for other areas of the Torah, that's enough. Because there's a din of rov, so you follow the rov, it doesn't have to be true. But here we're more concerned that it also be true. So therefore we want to go beyond this potential fluke with one crazy guy, and we make it a majority of two. Now that din, that's something that takes a little bit more to say about, so we'll follow up on that next week. Question about that?
More like a comment. When we have a rule, let's say, for conscience, we know that, let's say, out of the three meats,
right,
there's three meats, we know that one of them is not
correct.
Kosher, but we declare it kosher. So
right.
It's more, is it along those lines that we can't do that?
And we don't want to do that, right, exactly. Right, I think that was just alluding to, that in other areas of halacha, we can handle the fact that our robe may not reflect truth. It reflects a hanhaga, reflects a way that the Torah tells you you're allowed to behave. You're allowed to assume this is true, even though you may know that it can't be true. But when it comes to Mrs. Bezdin, we're not going to say that. So that din is an important one, which we'll continue on Monday. We'll have one more nekuda, and then we'll chazan and we'll daven. The Torah Tumima, in his frustration about the din of Sanhedrin Shul Kulachova, so he also asks, he says, we know that the Gemara tells us also, and this is, again, we talked about this on Sunday, that if you have somebody who's a danger to society, so let's say they don't have witnesses, they don't have evidence, but everyone knows the guy's guilty, so they have ways of dealing with him. And the Gemara talks about they would lock somebody in a jail, in a kippah, and they would give him something that would make him die. So it's a little funny that this guy gets in worse trouble than the guy who's so guilty that everyone thinks he's guilty. Right? Did everyone say, the guy is so clearly guilty with so many witnesses and so much evidence and everything that the whole panel is 23-0, so he gets off scot-free. He goes to the Bahamas. Well, this guy who's killing people without any edim at all, so him they're going to lock in the kippah, it seems hard to believe. Now, I think based on what we've seen so far, we can explain that, because this din of Sanhedrin Kulachova is a function of Misas Bezdin qua Sanhedrin. It's a part of the whole Misas Bezdin as onish. While the idea of putting somebody in a kippah is not coming from the function of Misas Bezdin, it's coming from system two that we talked about on Sunday when we laid out there were three systems. So system two is protecting society, so that's where it's coming from. It's coming from a different place, so indeed it's not going to fit the Kavah Chomer in Ephanam. But, just parenthetically, on a practical note, I don't know how the Torah Tumima knows that we don't put this guy in the kippah. Maybe we do. Right? Especially if we have enough room that we could have him off focus, Rishonim, whether it means he gets set free or he gets executed immediately. So then, it's hard to believe that we know for sure that if he gets set free, that the men don't go and take care of Mugowitz. So I don't know if the Kasha necessarily has to get off the ground. But even if the facts are the case, maybe that could explain the difference between the two. All right, so let's quickly recap what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that we see a couple of dinim in our Mishnah. First, we see that we acquired 23 for Misas Bezdin. And there was a major machlokas Rishonim that Ramban and Chumash, in the pasuk of Al Pishnayim or Shlosha, Ramban quotes Rav Sajigon that Shlosha is needed for the Kabbalah Seidus, and there the context is Dina Nefashos. The Ramban says can't be, it needs 23 throughout. And you find the same machlok between Rashi and the Ran and Daf Yizayim. Maybe the Rambam gets involved too. So we ask the question, what is this machlokas, this idea, do you need 23 just for the psak, or for the Kabbalah Sa'edas, what exactly is going on? And in order to understand it a little bit, we talked about the din of the Tzilu Eda, the Shaftu Eda, which we saw has a couple nafkaminas. We saw the Mishnah tells us that it means that you have to have 23, because you have to have 10, and 10 plus enough to be machriya, and it's got to win by 2, and it can't be even, you come up to 23. And we find Yerushalmi tells us that there can't be a bias, that the dayan can't be related either to the victim or the offender, because he needs to preserve both abilities, both the shoftu and the hitzilu component. That's suggesting a couple of chidushim there, that there's a parallel between the two. All the other sources we see really emphasize the hitzilu, but here we see there's got to be a parallel between the two, and that not only it's about the whole panel, but that each individual has to have that kind of potential within him. And then we considered the din that the Gemara does not explicitly connect, but might be connected. The Gemara Sahedrin Shiral Kul Vachova, and the Torah Tumima considers maybe that's a function of the Yitzhu Eda. Ultimately, he likes the unusual interpretation of the Rana, that it means that a person who's unanimously found guilty is killed even more quickly. But the mainstream interpretation is that it means he gets off, and that could be a function of Yitzhu Eda also. And explicitly, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah connects with Tzilu Eda to a dayan, that one of the functions of the dayan is he's got to be able to consider that the person is innocent, and if you saw it happen, then it's not going to work. So the Torah Tumima asks, well, maybe it's even better according to the din of Shiro Kulvachova. So get him on the panel, and then the guy all the more so may end up being set free because it will be a part of the unanimous vote against him. So this is according to the Ramah, you can see actually works well then, that will get him in bigger trouble, so then we don't want to put this person there that's going to get him in bigger trouble. But even if you take the mainstream interpretation, maybe the idea is you need to have an Eidah Matzelus during the Birur, and he's not going to participate in the Birur as an Eidah Matzelus, therefore he's not qualified. And based on that, we also then consider the question, so what do you need the 23 for? Do you need the 23 just for the psak, or also for the birur, or also for the whole analysis involving asking the witnesses also? And we noted in that context, the Mechassinuch's raya he thought he had against the Ramban, that the Ramban's basic point is that whatever the number of the Mishnah is, you have to have throughout. So if his Mishnah says 23 for Dina Nefashos, you have to have that for the Kabbalah Seidus also. So it's not true, because the Mishnah says you need 71 for your Hanidachas. And there we know that the Kabbalah Sa'edus can be with 23. So it shows it doesn't have to be the same number. So we've mentioned the Zifrin Shmuel, that no, it's not the case. But the rules across the board, that you need 23 for Dinei Nefashos. And 23, both for the Kabbalah Sa'edus and for the Psak. So since the Hanidachas has Dinei Nefashos involved, you need 23 for the Kabbalah Sa'edus. And the 23 there is all based on Gitzilu Eda. It's a requirement that the panel dealing with life and death issues has to have a 10 and a 10 and another 3. And then we noted this whole point that Gitzilu Eda seems to be a halacha that colors all of the nefashos and biases that we told, and that's something that characterizes the nefashos as having different rules than other areas of halacha. And we saw the machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos, that Rashi says that Sofek Nefashos B'Hakol is based on the Tzilu Eda, Rashi and Tzubis, and Tosfos Bava Basra says, can't be, well, we know already, you don't need it, that you're not going to kill somebody with Sofek. And we mentioned the approach of Bochanan and Yosef Engel, that we need the Tzilu Eda to make it into a Din Vadai, the person is Vadai Potter, if there's a Sofek about his status. So what's the nafkamina of calling Vadai Potter instead of Sofek Potter? So Yosef Engel mentions that if the Sanhedrin does kill him, they won't be considered rotsvim. And as he and Bochanan both mentioned, that the question of Kamisa Bailam Kach Misa Shor, do you have such a bias within Misa Shor also, where there's no Pikuach Nefesh, no Sofek Nefesh Lahakyo by Svara, but maybe there is a Dana of Yitzilu Eda if that's inherently part of Misa Bezdin. And then we suggested that the whole nature of Yonish Misa Bezdin means to specifically kill somebody who is Vadai guilty, and anything that's not within those parameters is not a part of the Chi of Misa. And then we just noted two other points, that the din, the getting a majority of twos, for Devil Ruvain writes, that's because you need more than just a robe that tells you how you're allowed to behave, but a robe that actually contributes to the B-Rur, that actually is part of clarifying the actual story, and that presumably is also connected to B'Tzilu Ha'idah. And then we mentioned the Tarek Mina's question, that if we have a din that somebody who kills without witnesses gets put into the kippah, so why is the guy who's so guilty with so many witnesses, why should he get better off? That doesn't make sense, that he's exonerated completely. So we suggested two approaches. First of all, we don't know if that's true. It could be that he is, after that, captured again and put into the kippah. But even if it's different, it's because two different systems. That in terms of Misa's Bezdin, so it's a chisar and Yitzivah Ha'edah, so you can't have the onesh of Misa's Bezdin. But as far as system two, as far as the idea of protecting societies, that's coming from a different cheshbon, and that's where you get the din of kippah coming from. Okay, so Bez Hashem, tomorrow we will look at Parshas Lech Lecha. God willing, on Sunday we will continue the general discussion of capital punishment, and it'll segue right back into this. And then we will, Bez Hashem, get out of the Mishnah.